American Craftsman podcast is sponsored by Hayfla. Hayfla offers a wide range of products and solutions for the woodworking and furniture making industries, from hinges and drawer slides to connectors and dowels, sandpaper, shop carts, wood glue, and everything in between. Exclusive product lines such as Lux LED lighting and Slido door hardware ensure that every project you create is built to last. Learn more at Hayfla.com.
Wow! I feel good!
Welcome back. It's funny, when I pulled the mics in, immediately heard the table saw.
Yeah.
So, joined today by our buddy, Vince, formerly known as Rob Vincep. Yeah. remembering back to the first season of the podcast, I was thinking about that today. It was cracking me up.
The old patron days?
Yeah.
You guys still run the Patreon?
Yeah, it's still there. We don't offer anything.
I think I might still be giving you $5 a month.
Yeah, it's just like
well worth it.
Yeah, a support only Patreon. Who knows? It might come back as something someday. But Vince, it's Patty, right?
Yeah, Patty.
Okay. I'm always afraid. I have one of those names that everybody gets wrong.
I know. I mean, my it's actually Patty. It's mm-hmm. like it's Italian. It's like some town in Sicily. But like my grandparents, you know, very mid century. Like
they're like we're American now.
Exactly. And yeah. So it's. So I always say it's like Patty Smith because that's how she spells it too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how like, you know, so we're in the Northeast and I think New Jersey, it's either New Jersey or New York has like the highest per capita percentage of Italian.
Hell yeah.
You know, people or whatever. And so we have all these names that we know. We grew up. Did you grow up?
No. So I grew up in California.
Okay. So we'll get to that. But having grown up in New Jersey, like, you know, I grew up around a lot of Italians. I'm a quarter Italian. So basically my mom's side, like, you know, we were always with the Italians on that side. So then you go to like
dinner.
Yeah. Like I went to school in West Virginia or you go to, well, maybe Florida's a bad example because there's a lot of,
retired people,
Northeast expats.
Yeah. Know?
But you go to like the Midwest and you hear all of these super anglicized Italian names.
It does. It sounds crazy. I mean, my grandmother has a saying. She always says, you can always trust somebody with a vowel at the end of their name. It's like, cause they're part of the tribe. And then I'm like, no, you can't.
I have like the most consonant letter at the end. G.
Not great. Yeah, not great. No, you're not skating with any of us.
Definitely not. I'm a Caprio though.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's good old world Italian name.
Yeah, I think Naples, like outside of Naples is where.
Yeah. We're from. My grandmother's like maiden name was D'Annunzio, mm-hmm. which is of Nunzio, which is outside of Naples.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like But yes.
You may hear tools running. Keith is actually
cuz this is a real shop.
Yeah, that's right. Keith is in there cutting.
This is not just a content creating factory.
Yeah, first time the podcast has happened while work is actually getting done. First time ever.
And you're bleeding.
Yeah.
Every minute that we're in here.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so I'm going away Sunday and coming back Saturday. So I mean, and I'm so behind aside from that. It's like, well, what can
vacation,
I do?
When you run your own business, it's like a vacation's not a vacation. Cause you're like, fuck. I got to get that thing done. Like,
and emails are going to keep coming in and people are going to be like, hey, I just had a question about, or I'll get a call. I'm over at the kitchen. We're looking at the electrical. I'm like, what can I do?
You're like, I'm on my third daiquiri. This is not.
Oh yeah. I've been trying to think about what I'm going to drink.
All right. Let's brainstorm. What do you got?
You know, I was thinking like gin and tonic, splash of Sprite's like a pretty good.
That's a good all day drink.
Yeah. Not too much sugar, but still like. You know, Keith said, oh, I go like whiskey and ginger. That just doesn't seem like a Dominican Republic drink to me.
No, you got to go like rum and coke, man.
Yeah.
I feel like some like, or daiquiris.
Actual daiquiri.
Yeah, like an old, that's like my favorite drink.
What is that? It's like lime juice, simple syrup, rum.
And rum. And that's it. Yeah. Simple.
That might be a good option.
The only thing is you, two or three of those, you can suck them down in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
They're very tasty.
You know, what's good is just like rum and water. Yeah. Not silver rum. Like, okay. like an aged rum and water.
All right.
With like a lot of ice.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I mean, something that you can just, cause are you going to be on the beach?
Yeah. It's like an all inclusive type place. So there's pools, a beach.
Yeah. You know. You're going to be going from chaise lounge to chaise lounge. That's the game.
I was thinking about bringing like a cup like this, because they'll put it in whatever, you know, if you could bring like
you could have the branded cup,
one of those Bubba jugs or whatever, a big gulp.
Well, wait, what do you do with your, because you have a little one, right?
Yeah, like, he's five.
Okay.
So he's coming with us.
So what's, what is he, do they have stuff for him to do there?
Yeah, they have like a kiddie pool that has like a little slide and like the thing that dumps the water on your head. And yes, he's so excited.
Everybody's happy.
Yeah. He hasn't, like we went to like Legoland and did stuff like that, but he hasn't been on like a vacation, never been on a plane.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's going to be, that's the whole vacation.
He's super pumped.
That's like getting something for Christmas and being like the box. Look how big the box is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's like, and then you get to do it on the way home too.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The anticipation is going to be killing him, I'm sure.
But my mother-in-law was telling him yesterday, she's like, listen, like the plane is exciting, but like, you know, you get on and it's exciting and then you have to wait. It's like, so it's just like, you know, she's pretty good at like putting things into realistic.
Managing expectations. Yeah,
exactly. But anyway, we got very off topic quickly. So why don't you tell everybody what you do, a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I design and build furniture. I usually tell people I like pretend to make furniture because I still feel like after, you know, however, not that many years, I still feel like I'm like faking it till I make it.
Imposter syndrome is rampant in the community.
Dude, I mean, well, especially when I think about like you guys who have between the two of you, like just combined how many years of experience. I mean, so many.
Yeah.
But yeah, I make, I like design, build furniture. My, brand is called Lesser Miracle. I started really making furniture full time during COVID. Mm-hmm. Before that I was a sculptor and, I worked in the art world, like in a myriad of varying, mostly shitty jobs. Sorry.
I think art's like furniture where it's like, you know, the bottom and middle are kind of rough until you get to the very top.
Yeah. When
like,
you get to that very top hole, I mean,
you're good.
It rocks. But, I mean, I was like, you know, helping people like do big outdoor installations and like fabricating sculpture. Like I've always been like a person who works with my hands.
What mediums of sculpture? Anything?
Kind of anything. I mean, like, you know, I would like help people who were like artists who made mostly like studio work, like indoor kind of work, help them translate that to like, you know, big outdoor commissions. So like there's a bunch of cool organizations in New York City that like, you know, put on outdoor sculpture shows around the city. And like, you know, there's a whole industry of people whose jobs it is to like make those a reality. And, you know, usually like artists are not good. I mean, when an artist is great, they're a really good communicator, but like a lot of the time artists are not super good communicators. And so like being a person who knows how to use like 3D modeling software and can kind of knows how things are made, has a good idea of like the tactile quality of stuff, is like a very helpful person to have in that process if that's not your thing. So you can, you know, like just helping somebody, like bridging like the gap between a guy who runs a foundry in Maine to like an artist who's like, you know, like a Yale graduate who lives in the city, who's like sort of,
it's like that guy in Office Space. They're like, what exactly do you do? He's exactly. Like, well, I talk to the,
like, well,
we can't have the technicians talking to the customers because
precisely. Yeah. And I mean, that's like, and yeah, you need somebody to like do that. And so that's kind of what I was doing for a while. And then, you know, I had a sculpture, like a little teeny, like it's truly probably was half the size of this room, which because this is an audio medium, this room is small, but, but like, you know, and when pandemic happened, like, you know, I kind of thought to myself, like, I haven't been super inspired making stuff recently. And like, I don't know where this body of work is going. And I also was sort of had in the back of my head, like maybe we're all going to die. And so, you know, I was like, all right,
that could still happen.
And you know what? Honestly, if the pandemic came back, it could be great for me. I'm just saying, but like, you know, I was unemployed like a ton of people. I got the pandemic unemployment. Mm-hmm. And so I just decided I'm going to start making stuff for my house. And like, I had nothing, you know, I wasn't seeing anybody. So I was posting like kind of build videos of me. Like truly the first thing I posted on Instagram that was like a piece of furniture was this. I had found this Alvar Aalto chair outside of a KFC on Fulton Street in Brooklyn. And I thought it was the end times. I just grabbed it and it was all peeling. The veneer was like birch veneer was coming off. And so I was like, I just thought to myself, wouldn't that be a fun project to like peel all this veneer off and see if I can re-veneer this chair? I'd never done that before. I thought I was hot shit. I had a Festool track saw and then a dust collector and a dream.
And usually it takes people a couple of years to get the Festool.
Yeah, I know. I'd bought it shortly before because I was like, maybe I'll get back into woodworking. Because I had actually interned for a furniture maker when I was in high school.
I was going to ask if you had done any prior.
Yeah, I mean, I barely touched a tool back then. This guy was like,
sweep the floor over there.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah. It was like, we don't have a time saver. You're the time saver.
Yeah.
And so and I mean,
that's relatable.
So much sanding. I did so much sanding, but I was like, I don't know. I was like a 17-year-old and I thought it was awesome. So anyway, I started making stuff for my house. I was like, you know, bought walnut ply and made this little Raggedy Ann looking chair and started posting it on Instagram. And I had all these friends who were, you know, like gay party boys in the city who, you know, spend their money on clothes and trips and
quirky furniture.
Yeah. And so, and they didn't have, you know, they couldn't go on trips and they didn't make any sense to buy clothes. So looked at their apartments and were like, well, these suck. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my first clients were like friends of mine who I had like been out at clubs with or who I knew socially. And I don't fucking know why they took a chance on me.
They're going to be on Antiques Roadshow in like 25 years. They're like, yeah, this is an early Lesser Miracle.
Yeah. And it turns out it's worth
$375,000.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that'll be the early work where they're like, it's still not worth anything. Like,
he was still, you know, cutting his teeth.
Yeah, exactly. You can see the glue here and here. And
you could insure it for $100,000.
Exactly. You can see here, he used a Watco finish that he picked up at Home Depot. Well, it's not Danish oil, but it's kind of like Danish oil.
It says that on the label.
Exactly. And so that's kind of how I started. And it just sort of snowballed from there. Like I didn't, you know, I mean, thank God for pandemic unemployment. Like literally I didn't have a huge profit incentive. Like I was basically able to, every time I did a job, buy a tool and all my profit would just be the tool. And I was, you know, made good use of this money. And after, you know, a year I was like doing jobs. And, I mean, I really, when I say I'm like self-taught, I'm like really self-taught. Like I remember early on finding you guys through Willie and listening to the podcast that you did with Willie like years ago.
Unfortunately, the audio was so fucked on that.
I remember that. And I remember thinking, God damn, I need this information. I
sent that to people to like try and get them to fix it. And
really?
To no avail. I don't know. I still don't know what happened, but.
But yeah, I mean, I would DM you guys because you guys were making such cool stuff to me. And I thought like, the way that you worked was so cool and like your shop seemed so like idyllic. Like, you know, now you're telling me like, oh fuck, we were like, you know, stuck in this tiny space moving stuff around. And
it had that look like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like, what was that? What's the TV?
Like a new Yankee Workshop.
And I just seemed so fun and cool. And so I was, you know, like when I'd get a project, I'd be like, okay, like let me Google or like look this up on YouTube and find creators on YouTube who were like posting content and would literally like sometimes like use techniques that they had done. Like I remember learning about like a Festool domino and thinking like, oh my God. But holy shit, that thing's so expensive.
Yeah.
And getting one and like every time I'd get something new, I'd like get it specifically for this one job and then would keep using it down the road. And so that's sort of how it all started. And then, you know, kind of long and short, I like had an ex who I started a business with. I don't recommend that. this turns out doesn't always go super well, but I, the kind of like the first big thing that we had was, I used to work as an art handler for this gallery called David Lewis, and David and I were friends, and he he had like just moved into a new apartment and wanted somebody to like help furnish it for him, but didn't really want to like get a decorator. So I started like, you know, making like buying him like flatware and stuff like that. And then also like kind of making furniture here and there. And, you know, after a while he was like, well, do you want to just like, your furniture feels kind of like art. And so he's like, it's somewhere in between. And we'd have these like long conversations. He was really into like pulp fantasy and like 70s kind of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And like that was, I was also into that. And my ex was, and we would have these like long ranging conversations that would go from like talking about philosophy to talking about like contemporary art and talking about furniture. And like,
I see that aesthetic in your stuff now.
Yeah.
Like that 70s sci-fi kind
of. Well, like this room, I get a huge kick out of this, like, you know, 70s wood paneling, because like, I kind of feel like that's part of the aesthetic too. It's not only like the world that like nerds playing D&D were like creating at that time, but also like the spaces that they were creating it in.
Yeah.
Feels like I'm just like, you know, absorbing that aesthetic. And so like, that's, you know, and so he like, I don't know why he asked us to do a show, but he did and agreed to pay for all the materials. And so we spent like 3 months building all this furniture. And he had a PR agency at the time who were like these cool queer people who like really wanted to help us out and got us all this press, and that kind of snowballed. And we started meeting like architects and designers, and, you know, a lot of my clients were also just like art world people, mm-hmm. like people who were around the gallery or who were just like friends of mine. And,
yeah. I'm probably sick of just seeing the same old
stuff, and I mean,
you know what I mean?
And I would say like my, like, I think the prevailing aesthetic in New York at the time was very like, I call it blobject. Mm-hmm. Like it's stuff that's like real goopy, really soft, really body sort of like conscious and like amorphous. And like, I hate that. I hate that stuff. So I wanted to make something that was like in opposition to that. Cause like I grew up around a lot of like mission style furniture and like with the architecture of like Bernard Maybeck and Julia Morgan and in California. And like my grandmother was like this lover of architecture. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had that aesthetic in my head. And then that's where, you know, kind of the aesthetics of Lesser Miracle came from, with grafted on to sort of thinking about fantasy and thinking about like, you know, medieval architecture and stuff like that. And so, that's kind of where I've gotten now. I mean, that's the backstory.
Yeah. Like, so how would you describe, I mean, you kind of just did, but like, how would you describe what you're designing? Like
I had a friend just tell me the other night, he's like, I just think of your furniture as being medieval century modern. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that pretty well. Okay.
That's a regular, regular occurrence.
Me too. Oh, me too. It's crazy.
We had a kid rip. So this is another replacement, but they ripped one of these lights down that I have sitting here on the table on top of that carpet. That's like a light, that black thing. God. They ripped it off the wall. And like, the guy like jumped up and like slam dunked it.
Oh my God. I mean, the outside of my shop is like fully just graffitied everywhere, mm-hmm. like the roll up door. And like, I have the you know, little like metal like front door that gets into the shop.
Oh yeah.
That I have painted black, and I just Sharpie on it Lesser Miracle, because
every other week
it's coming. Like every other week it's like gets graffitied, and I just paint it over, and I consider like that's mine. That's mm-hmm. that's my space.
You could have the rest.
Yeah, that door, you can graffiti anything else on the building, because also it makes it look like there's nothing valuable in there.
Yeah.
And like but that one door, that's mine. That's my space.
We should say, your shop's in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. So I work out of Brooklyn. I mean, it's brutal, but it's, but you know, it like works for me. It's like where clients are, and it's kind of where my community is. And, I don't know if it's an insane thing to do. Like I always ask people, like, I feel like you guys must think it's an insane thing to try and run a business out of Brooklyn.
Yeah. I mean, I've never like lived in the city. So it's all just assumption on my mm-hmm. end. You know what I mean?
It's like, crazy, but it's a manageable, like I'm crazy because of it.
Yeah. And I think there's a certain, like, it adds like almost like this sense of, I don't know if it's credibility or something. There's something about, it's like, oh yeah, my shop's in Brooklyn. It's like, I don't know. It's just for people who live in the city specifically. Mm-hmm. I think they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Made like in, if you're like, my shop's in New Jersey, they're like, oh, fuck this guy.
Well, Made in New York really has like a certain je ne sais quoi to it. Yeah. And like that helps a lot. I mean, also saying, I have a lot of friends who are designers and, you know, creative people and whatever. But I think to be like, no, design build, like I'm making everything. Mm-hmm. I think that it's not cachet because it's the opposite of that, but it's like it's somehow seen is so out of place for most people. Because I feel like here, you know, if you to tell people like, you know, you run this big business in New Jersey and like people are going to assume like, yeah, you got a big shop, you got a crew, you got like people, you're making everything. Mm-hmm. But like, I think when you hear New York, you assume like, something different.
Yeah, like that they're just coming up with ideas and then it's getting farmed out to somebody in New Jersey.
Exactly. Exactly. And whatever, no one and you don't know how to make anything. Yeah,
right.
But it's like we're fighting against the opposite assumptions cuz like you guys design beautiful work. I mean, you guys like truly from the time I started, I have had in my head always just be like Green Street. Like just it's like when in doubt, just like do stuff with like the, you know, sort of the aesthetic or the philosophy or like the, you know, kind of like real sense of like craft that you guys approach things with. And I think that because it's stubborn, right? It's like really stubborn to be like, I'm going to make my own cabinet boxes. Like, and it doesn't, and like ultimately it's a bad business, but like,
yeah, you know, we've pivoted a little bit.
Yeah. But you guys still have the, I mean, I'm looking at that, like this really long set of, you know, of cabinets that you guys are doing. I mean, those are stunning.
Yeah, thanks.
Like, you know, I don't think most people are putting out work at that level. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, even people with nice big shops like you do. So I think that's like, I definitely feel like I've learned a lot and also have absorbed a lot, like, in terms of just your philosophy of like building stuff.
Yeah. It's like that whole arts and crafts, you know, thing. I think, you know, you don't always like, you know, like I said, we've sort of pivoted the business, but keeping all those ideals in the background, you know, now we realize like we don't have to build the doors on every job.
Yeah.
You know, because here's the thing, not every client can afford to have us build the doors on every job. So totally. It's like, do we just turn away all this work all the time or do we take the cool jobs when we can and do the other jobs when jobs aren't around.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You have to. And I mean,
and the more work you put out, the more work comes in. So it's like you have to do the work in order to get the work. So
totally. I mean, I used to put a lot of like time into like Instagram and social media and stuff like that. Thinking, you know, getting like, I get people coming through Instagram all the time. Like people just, you know, asking me for quotes and asking me for stuff. And for a long time, I put a lot of like stock into that, you know, thinking like that's where my business is going to be. And now it's like, if somebody comes through on Instagram, I'm like, you don't have enough money. Like, I'm just like, this isn't no. Cause like,
yeah, because you have to know what you're getting into. You know? So it's it needs to be like a referral.
Right. I can't afford me.
Yeah.
Like I can't, like I have my house is full of like reject stuff and, you know, if I don't have a job for a week or something like that, and I got leftover like mahogany for something, I'm like, ooh, it's time for a new coffee table. Like, you know, and that's when I'll make stuff for myself. But like, it sometimes feels like when you're like, if you were selling Porsches or something like that, it's like, nope.
Yeah. It's like I drive a Kia.
Yeah. Exactly. And I like it that way.
That's like my kitchen. You know, I think I've fully abandoned the idea of building.
Cause you were like, so I remember you guys talking about this on the podcast that it was
like it's going to be it was going to be inset cherry book match panels. Then I'm like, well, I'll do 1-inch doors, overlay cherry grain match. And now I'm like, I have like, I don't know, 4 or 5 cabinets built and some doors built and they're grain match. Nice 1-inch. But yeah, I think I'm just going to have them CNC cut. I'm going to buy the doors.
I just need fuck it. Just call IKEA and just have the installers do it however they want to.
Fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. Reform. Ugh. Anytime someone's like, will you do a kitchen? I'm like, you know, Reform makes really nice fronts for IKEA cabinets.
Oh yeah. I haven't heard of that.
Reforms. I mean, they're great. They're that, like, truly, if you ask me to do a kitchen, that that's like me, like a deer caught in headlights. Like mm-hmm. my, for reference, my shop now I've sized up a few times, but I'm still working in like a, with effectively like 600 square feet. Like it's so small. Like I,
well, New York kitchen, you should be able to fit in there. Not like this one that true. I'm working on in there. It's, true. It's huge.
Yeah. It's just a stove. That's it.
So this is the kitchen that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, here, I'll pull it up.
For the one. Listeners, for the listeners, this is a kitchen that is the size of my apartment.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
This is going to be cool. Is lower uppers and lowers?
Yeah.
So is everybody, are people still asking for uppers these days? Because like,
I feel like they're, they've been sort of going out of style in the more, yeah, there's the, in the more
cool,
you know, hip sort of homes, but you know, like this is a very traditional kind
totally.
Of, they probably think they're going wild by having like these floating shelves. They're like, yeah, we're getting real wacky.
I mean, those, but like, that's the thing with floating shelves. It's like they always, cause I know tons of people have torn out the uppers in their, you know, kitchens in Brooklyn. And then, cause they don't have any dishes and they don't cook, like they just have the, you know, big floating shelves there. Yeah. And like, they look awful. Unless you're like, unless you're a decorator or designer or something, and you've like got
a curated little
gorgeous Hasami, you know, like dishware mm-hmm. and like vases, vintage stuff from Europe. And
can't it's put
like,
Corel up there.
Yeah, you can't. It doesn't work. But I have tons of people asking for like these kitchen, like when they do ask for a kitchen, it's like they're asking for stainless countertop mm-hmm. with like Baltic birch, raw edge. Everybody's like just natural, and they think that means unfinished.
Right.
I'm just like, oh my God.
You're like, you can't have unfinished.
Yeah. I'm like, in your kid, like,
wait till your kids with their grubby hands touch it one time.
These are no kids people. These are people, yeah.
Your friend, your drunk friend came over.
There it is.
Spilled red wine down
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Your it's like, raw Baltic birch right, end panel.
You're going to love that. Like, and like,
because that's never coming out.
Yeah, never, ever. That's a new kitchen.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe that's more business for me.
That's true. It's a lived-in look.
Exactly. The loft look. I mean, yeah. And like, it's a, like, have you seen all these stainless, like these full stainless steel kitchens that people have been doing?
I've seen, yeah, and I know there's a couple, I know there's an English company that makes them because we had someone like they wanted us to like price against it. And I'm like, there's how are we going to make these cabinets cheaper than a place that's set up to make these cabinets?
Yeah.
And I'm not a welder. No. First of all, I own a welder, but I don't really know how to use it.
Right. Like they're doing these full, I mean, they're kind of cool. Like this is cool, you know, like super yeah, like minimal.
Monolithic.
Yeah. But like, I mean, I don't know how you cook in one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my, I have a stainless, you know, fridge and range and everything, and they're just constantly filthy.
I mean, doesn't your son just like schmear? Yeah, there's mac and cheese on it all the time.
There would be like drawings with magnets. Just it would be completely covered.
Exactly. Absolutely. Crayon everywhere.
Yeah. No, he's moved up to markers and
that's a bad
colored
phase.
Pencils.
That's
yeah.
That's the permanent destruction phase.
Yeah. Luckily, he. He's never really drawn on anything. Not like, you know, accidentally.
Yeah.
Like going off of the paper kind of thing. But man, like when you have a 5-year-old, I probably have like the equivalent of like 10 Rubbermaid containers of just like drawings. Cause like you can't just like throw them away.
No.
You're like, well, we'll just keep it for a little while.
But you know, when he goes to college mm-hmm. and you're like probably going through stuff, he's going to be like, throw those away. And like, You guys are going to be like, no, but they're ours. They're precious. Mm-hmm. Like my mom did that for years. My brother and when we went to college, our bedrooms were like creepy museums. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For like 5 years. And then she realized I want a home office and a home gym. Mm-hmm. And it was like, now I'm like, where do we sleep? She's like, don't come over.
Yeah. There's a hotel.
Yeah, exactly. Sleep at your aunt's house.
Yeah. My parents redid my room. It wasn't very long after I was gone, you know.
My mom's in the process of like redoing. She has like a, she's not, my mom's a lawyer. My parents are both lawyers. Mm-hmm. So like really set me up to be a person in the trades.
Yeah.
But like they
were so proud of you.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, as long as you can like write an email, like we don't care. Right. But you know, now she has like a like local interior designers like helping her like redo her house, and you know, everything she sends me, every finish she sends me, I'm like, oh
yeah.
Like every sink, every like
still in California.
Yeah. She's okay. Still in California. My dad passed away a couple of years ago, but she's like, and she's kind of doing it herself. And like every time I try to give notes, it's like, at this point I'm like, go with God. Cause I can't like handle all these disappointments like over and over again. Oh, but she like, you know, our house is, it's in Berkeley. And if you know anything about like the architecture of Berkeley is actually really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. So like, that's where, you know, kind of the turn of the century, like a lot of like Green and Green.
Okay.
There's a, one of the fraternities at UC Berkeley is a Green and Green house is in sort of like the slow process of being destroyed by generations of frat bros.
Oh my God.
But like, it's kind of charming.
And they're living in there. They have no idea who the Green Brothers are.
I bet the fraternity has like a day where they like tell everybody like at the orientation, they're like, this is where the house is. And like, this is where the beer kegs go. And it's like, I'm sure it's destroyed on the inside, but it's a beautiful building. So like Berkeley has this really cool history of architecture. And like, as I said, my grandmother was like this like real aesthete and like loved architecture and would take me as a child, like on walks around the neighborhood and mm-hmm. would teach me about all these, you know, I remember I could identify like different corner treatments for like different kinds of clapboard, you know, like at a young age, and could identify a William Worcester house by the you know, way that they would seam the corners of the houses. Like she was, I mean, very pivotal in my like upbringing, as like an aesthetic thinker. And, but yeah, you know, like, my mom's house is like Spanish colonial and, mm-hmm. and it was built in the 30s and it has these cool old Chicago faucets and stuff like that. And she's like, wants to rip them all out. And I'm like, no, like, do it. And like, you know, but like, you know, it's at a certain point, it's like, I get it. She's like in her 60s and she wants something that's functional and like,
yeah, and you know, we don't all have, the stomach for like, you know, real cool
quirky tastes.
Yeah What's like the California aesthetic right now? Like, you know, here it's like it's been this way, the white shaker, and you know, we seem to be trending a little bit away from that, but you know, gray, white shaker,
painted across the board.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think in California it's probably the same, because like I think there's like this flattening, right? Like a lot of like people have talked about sort of the way that Instagram flattens culture, mm-hmm. right? Like, and flattens aesthetics and people's like there used to be such cool, like regional aesthetics. Like New England has like such a fucking rich history of like that you guys, you know, elucidated in your, what was it? Third season or something?
Second season.
Yeah. Like, you know, has like different, you know, California has this great history of mm-hmm. mid-century and modern architecture. And like, but I think now just because of like social media and Instagram, it all turns into the white shaker or whatever that, you know, your like style du jour is.
Yeah. We used to see like, you know, everything would pour in from either coast into the middle of the country, like whatever, 5 years later.
Now it's pouring out.
Yeah.
Like, I think that aesthetic is, I mean, I feel like at least, cause I don't know if I can quite speak to California at this point. Like, I think my friends, especially those in LA, like, I mean, there's so much great mid-century vintage. Like you can find so much cool old stuff.
And a lot on Instagram, you know, like there's accounts that are just dedicated to like old stuff. There's ones, you know, and they could be hyper specific. It's like mid-century Italian.
Yeah.
That's all they have.
No. And like, I mean, there's people out here. Like I talked to, like, there's Good Behavior, Beal and Bell, the ginger out there in Greenport, on Long Island, like on the North Fork. She sells the coolest stuff that she just gets out of like old Hamptons houses. But like, I end up making, at least what people in the city want is it's just all white oak, mm-hmm. like just clear finish white oak across the board. And I feel like I'm in like a white oak prison.
Yeah.
Like I want to make weird goth old mahogany mm-hmm. shit. That's like, angry and pointy with gargoyles. And
yeah, because like, most of your stuff, I would say that you know really sticks in my head is mahogany.
Yeah,
very angular.
Yeah,
a lot of that terrorist sort of mm-hmm. look to it.
Yeah, I mean that comes from like so many different cultures too. Mm-hmm. Like I get worried about appropriating a lot of the time because like it is like just kind of going in and being like you know that's like a. My, you know, like Mayan, pyramid. Yeah, pyramids, yeah. Like Aztec pyramids, like just, you know, being like a white guy from California, like I don't want to be just like ripping that now. Sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, but like,
I thought of that.
That comes from totally, yeah. But like, that comes from like so many different ancient cultures. Yeah. Like what's interesting, the more you kind of study old architecture is you see how similar mm-hmm. a lot of techniques are. Like the furniture maker that I worked for in high school I would describe his style as sort of like Nordic and Japanese.
Oh wow.
Together. I mean,
he was like a legit furniture maker.
He was fucking good. And I've reached out to him I haven't gotten in touch with him in years, but I reached out to him a couple years ago to be like, hey man, like look what I'm doing.
I made it.
Like, thanks. And
bet you never thought.
Yeah, exactly. Like time saver. But yeah, like those two aesthetics are similar. Like, you know, like ancient Japanese and like old Nordic buildings, like longhouses, like those timbered frame structures, like those are not that different.
Yeah.
Just cause like climate wise and sort of like need wise, like those cultures were like pretty similar and like
similar woods too. I feel like
yeah.
A lot of those, like, you know, spruce
and, elm. I don't know.
I'm not familiar with, yeah, like the Japanese wood specifically.
They have every Japanese woodworker I follow, I'm always like, why can't I get that hardwood here? That stuff is so cool.
Oh yeah. We were just watching Ishitani Furniture. You ever watch him? We just watched a couple of his during lunch.
They're so cool.
Yeah.
It's like
his videos are like amazing.
Yeah.
How do you watch these in one? He watches everything and listens to everything in like 2x, 3x speed.
Oh my God.
I'm like, listen, I'm living life at 1x speed.
Yeah. Same. I mean, I got a lot of car time as we were saying earlier, like, working for yourself in New York City is mostly about schlepping. Mm-hmm. It's mostly just about getting one thing from one guy to another guy or picking something up or dropping something off. And like, so I got a lot of car time. So like you guys,
we're spoiled.
But every week having you guys to just like, I put the podcast on and I'm like, I feel like I'm just shooting the shit with you guys. And it's like, I know that it's sort of this weird parasocial relationship, but like, mm-hmm. oh my God, it's so nice to just hear somebody like chit chatting about like business or woodworking or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. There's, I listen to Keith does a podcast. I don't know if you've listened to it.
It's I think called, I did.
Working Hands.
Yeah.
He and Tony's up in, Canada. He's a hobbyist blacksmith, but he does blacksmithing. What the hell was I saying? Oh yeah. Like there's so many of these relatable moments where you just listen to people talk about being in the shop and dealing with clients and you know, you sit there and you listen, and like you said, it's like you're there because it's just so relatable.
Oh yeah. I mean, like truly it's like the nice thing about, you know, Will and his buddy Max, like mm-hmm. we text back and forth all the time, like, does this look okay?
Yeah.
You know, like sending me just like little pieces of something like, yeah, I just made this and it like, it looks wrong. Like, but I can't figure out why. I've been looking at it for 2 hours. Like you got anything, you know, and it's like, it's really helpful to just be like, oh, like, yeah, making it in shorter, like just, you know, do something, you know? And like, I think having that kind of community too is so helpful. Like, truly, like, I think the other day I was like trying to bid some job and it was a cabinet thing. And like, for reference, I will admit I am not a good cabinet maker. I have made.
Well, you're in the majority.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know what? If I can be like top half, mm-hmm. that's fine by
that's
me.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, probably not. But, you know, like I like trying to bid this job and it, you know, it was like something like this cabinet that had to match all these things in like a kid's room in like the basement of a brownstone in Brooklyn. And like the clients are super finicky and the designer is a real piece of work. And, and like, you know, I'm just like, and it's a new client. And like, I feel like with a new client, you're always like, how much can I charge this? What's this person's like
breaking point?
Where are we? Like, where are we with this? Because like, this job's not gonna be fun for me. Like, you know, I need the money, but like, you know, how are we gonna make this work? And so like, you know, just being able to bounce it to somebody and be like, what would you like? One, how would you resolve this?
Yep.
How would you, you know, how would you bill something like this? What would you charge? Like, you know, am I like, is there anything I'm not thinking of, you know? Cause I think there's so much of being self-taught too, is like, you know, unanticipated, like things happening.
It's the school of hard knocks. It's like you literally have to make the mistake in order to not do it the second time. There's basically no other way. Like if you're self-taught and you don't have a lot of people to
tell you like, don't do that.
Right. And they can't see everything that's coming, you know,
no.
Unless they're standing right next to you 24/7.
No.
So yeah, it's like, you got to take all these bumps, and sometimes like they're big bumps.
I'll tell you like the worst, like truly my most, I can't believe I'm going to tell however many people are on this podcast. No one's going to like be able to respect me at all after this, but like I'd probably been making furniture for a year and a half. And I had a friend who asked for this really big kind of Donald Judd style, super minimal, like, you know, 2-inch oak dining table. And he wanted it basically 4x8, like really honking. And it was going in a third floor apartment in Chinatown. Oh. And I'm like, okay. It was a big apartment. It was nice, but we, you know, I went to take measurements of the stairwell because I was like, I'm not gonna like, you know, deal with this and whatever. And so I, you know, I'm in the stairwell measuring. I even brought a 4x8 of cardboard because I was like, I'm gonna just see like how this works. And, you know, I'm like, maybe it's gonna fit. Maybe it's not gonna fit. Like, it's really close. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, look, we have to make this thing smaller, or we got to have it break, you know, just
two pieces
down the center. And he's a fashion designer, and all of his aesthetics are super clean.
He's like, we cannot.
And he's like, I will not sit at a table like that. And
it's funny, people really die on some hills like that.
And they do. And it's like, and then when you do cut it in half, they're like, yeah, it's fine. And you're like, fuck off. But so we get this thing where like, I had it in the back of my SUV sticking out of the back, like on Canal Street. And we start getting it into the stairwell. We make it up one turn, and there's this like security cage that, that literally like, you know, it's one of those ones just so you can't, if you get in the lobby, you can't just walk up the stairs into, the elevator opens into all these apartments. Like that's where we're at.
Holy shit.
And so we've got it in the stairwell, and I just didn't think about the cage when I was specking out the stairwell. It's like, call it 4 inches too big.
Ugh.
And I didn't like think to bring like a track saw to this install.
Is this solid wood, 2 inches?
Oh yeah.
White oak?
Yep.
Oh my God.
It weighed so much.
That's gotta be a couple.
I'd hired two like skater boys to help me like move this thing up there. And they're like, the first one was like, I don't think it's going to fit. And I was like, shut up. It's going to fit. And like,
I checked.
Yeah. I checked with my trusty piece of cardboard.
That's only an eighth of an inch thick.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
That's where you'll get fucked.
No, it is. I was like, I should have made like a torsion box or something to bring it up. And anyway, it doesn't fit.
Oh, man.
So I had to take, so anyway, we're like thinking of all these ways to make it fit and
not bang it up.
Oh, it was beyond banged up at this point. Like I was definitely in my head. I was like, I'm refinishing this thing tomorrow. It's like, I got to bring sanders. I got to fix this thing.
Oh man.
So someone suggests, why don't we just cut the cage off? And bold. I'm like, in my like, just like panic, right, to get this in there. I'm like, okay. So like 20 minutes later, back from Home Depot, We've got a Makita plug-in Sawzall, and we're just like trying to go through what turns out to be a like 3/4 by 3/4 square tube solid of steel to try and get the top of this cage off to get the thing out. We destroy it, and then we're still trying to get the thing up, and it still doesn't fit.
Oh, like, no, the homeowner said it's cool.
Yeah. And so we took it back. I don't even know what I told him. Like, I don't even think I told him that I cut it down like 3 inches, both dims, and brought it back up with the cage still off, and like, you know, got it into the apartment. And like, you know, 2 weeks later, the client calls me like furious and is like, oh yeah, he's renting the apartment. It's like a co-op or something. Mm-hmm. He's like, the co-op board is like going to kill me, and they want me to pay like $2,500 to fix the to fix the stairwell. And I was like, all I could say was like, well, I could have craned it in. You didn't want to pay for a crane quote. Yeah,
we're going to shut the street down. Yeah. Pay the NYPD.
Yeah. Oh my God. So that was truly the most harrowing experience I've ever had trying to get something into it. And now everything I make just breaks down into tiny little pieces because mm-hmm. I'm building ships and bottles. It's like building stuff when you're, I mean, do you guys do installs in the city very often?
We, so when we were working at Tom's, I did an install in Turtle Bay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it wasn't too bad. It was, there was street parking.
Yeah.
It was commercial parking on that side of the street.
I mean, I price into any install in the city that many days of parking tickets mm-hmm. and like, you know, and a little on top of that just for me. Like,
yeah, it's the PETA tax, the pain in the ass tax.
Exactly. I literally have a line item for it.
Priced something in Brooklyn. Where was it? I just had that up in Mosaic. And same thing. I put the PETA tax on it and they never even emailed me back. Where is it?
Does your PETA tax vary by borough?
87th Street. Yeah, I feel like Manhattan's got to be higher, you know?
Manhattan's
Brooklyn
like,
at least is like...
Well, that part of Brooklyn, like 87th Street, that's like, that's big houses.
We looked at it on Google Maps. It didn't look too bad, but I still got to drive there.
Yeah.
You know, I got to drive through Staten Island, go over the Verrazano Bridge.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That sucks.
If I got to go to Staten Island, you're getting charged.
Double.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's nuts sometimes. Like I was telling you, I just installed this big closet and like, you know, I was like for an hour when I was doing the site visit there with the GC, like, you know, measuring every doorway, the stairwell, mm-hmm. like the, you know, the heights on the elevator at the apartment level, the heights of the, like, really everything now. And I mean, that's just like, that's literally how you have to do it.
Well, we've told the story before how we built this, like, it was this long... It's like maybe 11 feet long, pretty short, like maybe 18 by 18 by 11 feet white, like a modern hanging sort of like media thing.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Hoboken. So okay. It's like, it's done. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, let me see about install. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, this is going to Hoboken. It's 11 feet long.
Oh my God.
It just fit 8th floor. It just fit like,
dude, walk it up
diagonal into the freight elevator. It just fit.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's yeah. I mean, I've done some, there's like, you know, that account like OSHA, is this okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I could have my own full OSHA. Is this okay? The number of freight elevator picks I have, cause I used to work, my old shop was on the 3rd floor in mm-hmm. this building that like a bunch of people like, what are they? Green River, you know, those guys.
That sounds familiar.
They're like, I don't know. They're some dudes who make some furniture
and they have like those big metal doors that close like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And like this,
those will take your finger off.
This one was the scare. I mean, you'd have to close these manually. So they mm-hmm. wouldn't, they were not automatic. This freight elevator and they were always broken and they were, I remember the dims exactly. Cause they were 7 by 7 by 7, which the fuck, like how, like
we just make it 8?
Yeah. Why couldn't we have done this 8? Like, why can't I get, it's like, I would be sheet goods on a cart turned sideways,
diagonal.
Like 12 footers. Like I'd cut stuff down in the freight, like, you know, in the loading bay, because mm-hmm. I couldn't get stuff into my shop. It was such a pain.
Yeah, we picked up that spray booth at a old building like that in Passaic, New Jersey, and same thing. I mean, it was only a couple like loads of stuff that we had to go up and down, but I'm like, I can't imagine doing this. And this guy had a full blown cabinet shop up there.
Yeah. It's crazy.
No, I mean, forklift, you know.
Yeah. I like, cause you can't. I mean, it won't support the weight, right? Like,
yeah,
you can't have a fork up there.
It was a pretty cool shop though. It had these cool like art deco kind of columns and stuff inside of it and stuff. It was pretty cool.
I mean, I feel like this is one thing that woodworkers maybe specifically like don't talk about is like shop envy all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I came in here and it's like salivating, like compared to my shop. Like when you go to somebody else's shop, you're like, oh fuck, that's cool. Like that's, I don't know. That's like a fun perk that I think we all kind of have. Like when you see somebody's shop and you're like, damn, that's.
And you always like, you know, everyone thinks their shop, I don't think our shop sucks, but like, you know, to me, it's just like, it is what it is. It's imperfect to me, you know, because whatever. But then when you go to somebody else's shop, it's always cooler than they think their shop is.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Well, so you need to get other people. I can't have you in my shop. You guys can't, you guys can't come until I've got like at least 2,000 square feet and like big slider. You guys are coming nowhere near my shop.
Sounds like you're moving to Jersey.
Yeah. Look, I thought about it.
What is it? Long Island City is a big spot for shops, I see.
Long Island City, Greenpoint. Honestly, out in East New York now, there's a bunch of shops. There's a really cool, I'm looking at a shop on Tuesday that's through this Greenpoint Manufacturing District. They're like this, they're actually awesome. Like people should know about them because I didn't know about them at all. They're like a nonprofit basically that buys industrial buildings, cuts them up into like thousand to 3,000, I would say, square foot spaces, renovates them really well, takes really good care of them, and then charges $2 a square foot on average, which in the city is like way under market. Yeah. And they give you all of these like tenant protections. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like you basically can't get kicked out. Like they really will come and fix stuff. Like they're really on top of it. And their whole thing is supporting small manufacturing in the city.
That's cool.
It's sick. And like, I had no idea that they existed until I went and visited a friend's shop who was in one of these places. And I was like, what is this? Like, this is utopian.
I mean, the New York City was built on the backs of those type of places. You know what I mean? Like, that's why those buildings are there.
Right.
Well, because once upon a time, they were actually, things were being made there.
Yeah. And I mean, still, like, if you think about the reason that, like, people think New York City is cool still is because people are making, like, small shops are still making cool stuff that's unique and like putting it in homes in the city. Like that's like, you know, part of why I think in some ways it's like resisted the white shaker apocalypse of, you know, the late, the like 2020s.
Yeah.
Cause it's, you know, like there still are people who eke it out, right?
Yeah.
Like who are really eking it out there, doing that kind of thing. It's tough though.
It could be a challenge, you know, trying to be creative, but being sort of shackled by the client and, you know, budget. The spatial requirements.
Totally. Totally. I mean, I've had clients before where, you know, they love the vision. They're like really into the work. They're like, you know, they want to pay for it. Like they're cool people and like, you know, we really are hemmed in by like literally a stairwell or like a management company that's like, no, you can't change anything. Or like, you know, we're like, I definitely feel like a lot of the time when I come into somebody's apartment and it's a rental, like I always, and people really want built-ins for some reason. Like, I mean, cause
people
they're cool.
Love built-in. We try and design everything to be like, we'll attach it to the wall. That's fine.
Yeah.
But like, can we just like bring it in like 2 inches on either side? You know,
exactly.
They're like, no. They're like, it's going to look like you could just bought it at a store. I'm like, what store are you buying this at? I've gotten that line so many times.
The built-in store? Where's the built-in store?
Yeah. No, well, they think if it's not fully built in that people are going to think that they bought it at the store. I'm like, first of all, why do you give a shit what anybody else thinks?
Yeah.
Second of all, look at it. What store would you get it at? Raymore and Flanagan?
Right.
or Bob's Discount Furniture.
Exactly. Like, are they selling like custom kitchens?
Like it's like 14 feet wide,
right? Know? And I think that's actually another thing I was going to say is like a lot of. Because I make a lot of floor standing work. Like mm-hmm. a lot of what I do is like tables, tons of tables. And, you know, the reason designers come to me is I've realized, and I always joke, like I'm constantly making giant furniture mm-hmm. in this city that is so crammed. And the reason that people come to you like is because you can't buy that from CB2, yeah. right? Like you can't get a 14-foot dining table from CB2. That's yep. just like not a thing. Like I did this crazy, it was a 16 foot by 4 foot, one of these, Downing Street tables, mm-hmm. Like very modern sort of like racetrack shaped table, that was going to the, I think I can say that it was going to the, Four Seasons in Abu Dhabi.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like, oh shit.
I feel like I saw something about that.
It was gray.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're into gray. But I was like, okay, well, they were like, can you do it in one piece? I was like, what? Like
the answer is I could do anything as long as you are willing to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, unless you're willing to pay for me to get a whole new shop that's 16 feet long, then yeah, go off. Mm. But like, yeah, I was like, no, we got to cut this thing in half. Like we're doing it in two pieces. And I was very specific about like, look, those pieces might like, you know, potato chip differently. Like there's going to be a little variation here and there. Cause like, you know, if you want it hardwood, which you say you do,
right.
Like that's how it's going to be. And, but like people come to you because they can't buy something in a store, mm-hmm. like because it's too big.
Right.
And I feel like I make a lot of furniture where it's like, if it's for a client and I'm not designing it, it's because it's like massive and like mm-hmm. room and board or, you know, DWR just doesn't sell something big enough.
That bed you just showed me is massive.
Oh yeah. That thing's huge. I mean,
the headboard's what, 10 feet wide?
Yeah. I mean, it's got these wings that, kind of articulate on the sides. So you can kind of like pull it in around you and it kind of ensconces you a little bit.
Oh, they actually move.
Yeah.
Oh,
so they're wow. on these, we had these custom made hinges out of brass from this fantastic fabricator in Connecticut who, they're like a knife hinge or not a knife hinge, but a what do you call like a two-way door hinge? Like, does that have a
pivot hinge?
Pivot hinge maybe. Yeah. But they're
like, for like a, what do they call those? Like a butler door?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something like that for like on a kitchen or something. Yeah. And they, but it's really hard to find them without, that aren't spring loaded.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these ones are just like, they fold in on themselves and they go to like a perfect 90 each way. They're so cool. Mm. We paid like $2,000 for a set of 8 of them.
That kind of stuff is crazy.
It's crazy, but they're worth it because they're so sick. And like it gives this piece like this really interesting articulation that, mm-hmm. you know, you can, I don't know, depending on how your space is, like you can angle them different ways and you can put different kind of nightstands in front of them and like all of that. But yeah, I mean, that thing's huge and that's all solid too.
And those have to be, they're pretty thick, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, those are that thing's all 8/4 and those big sled legs that it's sitting on are just two pieces of 8/4 glued up together. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. When are you going to be, showing that stuff off?
So that's going to be for design week. So this is,
that's what, September?
No, that's in May.
Oh, okay.
Like New York.
What do they do too?
No, it's like New York Design Week's hokey. It's like the, it's called like New York X Design and it's not like Salone in Milan or any of those other shows. It's like, it's, you can kind of just get on the calendar and like,
yeah, because we were supposed to do something for Design Week, in front of the Flatiron, that little,
thing
they have there. And I could have sworn that was in September last year.
You could be right. I mean, maybe they got moved around because of COVID or something like that.
Or maybe they just do it. Maybe it's not the same week every year. Maybe.
Maybe so, yeah. But know. It's but
or
but,
maybe they were fucking bullshitting me. I'm like, yeah, Design Week.
Yeah, totally.
Because I know all about that.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, so they're like, so can we get a discount? Because it's going to be great press.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
This is going to be in a magazine. So do you think you could like do it for half
for exposure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love working for exposure.
Oh my god.
It's so frustrating. I mean, that's another thing about working in the city is so many people are kind of dangle that sort of stuff in front of you.
Yep.
It's just like, that's not real. Like I know, I know that's not real, and you know that's not real.
Yeah, and there's what, like 10 million people in New York City?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So like,
I'm definitely going to show like 50 people.
Right, exactly. It's like, that's nothing.
I'd have a better chance just like standing in the street and screaming something.
Exactly. Yeah, people will listen to you more too.
Probably. I mean, yeah, that's normal behavior.
That's totally normal. I have like, when I have a big roll-up door, and do you ever get people just walking in?
Oh yeah. Because
you guys have a roll-up too, right?
Yeah. So like sometimes I'll be here by myself in the summertime, and we have a side door there and the overhead. Mm-hmm. And like all of a sudden there's somebody standing next to me.
Looking over your shoulder.
He's like, you guys hiring?
Like all the time.
No.
Yeah. You're like, oh. No, I do. It's like, I make sure to keep stuff in front of the door and mm-hmm. look mean. Cause like otherwise people just like, I had a last summer, I remember specifically this like couple who had clearly wandered out of Williamsburg and gotten mm-hmm. lost. Like they just walked in like it was like this was like an open house or something like that.
Gallery?
Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm working and it's really loud and go away. Yeah. Like, and I feel weird when people just walk into my shop and are like, can you make something for me? And I'm like, no. Like here's my Instagram.
Right.
Like, please go away.
Do a little research before
Yeah. It's like if you're walking in off the street, odds are you're not picking up what I'm putting down.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Like there's just no way.
It's like we're serving a pretty niche market here.
Yeah. And like it's silly. I mean, yeah, it happens. It just happens all the time where people like walk. The other day it was like really windy in the city and I had the door open and just down the street, like a tumbleweed, there was a air mattress. Just wait for
Sorry
it.
Sorry about that, folks.
There was a blown up air mattress just like going down the street. Oh. I was like, what the hell? That's the difference between, I feel like the difference between working out here where you can get a little sanity.
Yeah. It gets a little boisterous here when school lets out and the kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, it's loud.
Cause wait, didn't you have a bunch of kids like graffitiing the building?
Yeah, that happened. So we had the kid, I was telling you, smash the light. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody heard it. The podcast that came out today, the 12th with, that Keith and I recorded last week. We heard some sort of commotion, but didn't think anything of it. And then when we went to leave, it was like laying on the floor, all smashed up.
My God.
But yeah, we had kids graffiti this side over here twice.
That's so annoying.
Like some little shit in the front, but nothing crazy.
Too bad.
Yeah. But it was like as the building was being painted.
Yeah. Oh, that's so annoying. I had, yeah, like literally a couple months ago, someone just, cause there's like, so my neighborhood, there's all these warehouses that sell like takeout containers to all of the delis in the city. Hmm. And that's like where they all come to just get them. And I don't know why it's become like a thing, but just a bunch of businesses, that's what they do. So there's just like vans, you know, people's like minivans coming and going, people that's who crazy. Run little delis. Yeah.
What a like industry to be in. Like,
it's so weird.
Hey Steve, what do you do? Well, I sell takeout containers.
Yeah. And I make a shitload of money.
Yeah.
Like the woman who has the one next to me, she's driving like a big S-Class Mercedes. I'm like, I'm in the wrong industry.
And I guarantee it's not the only pot she's got her hand in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, then there's like stone cutting places around me too. Yeah, like there's a bunch of different kind of like warehousey industries. And then now they're all turning over to be like venues. Hmm. So there's like a couple like photo studios that are like clubs. It's weird too. Cause I've gone to a party in the neighborhood and like in the middle of the party, even like, just walk like two blocks to go to work right now. I shouldn't, but I could. This bathroom line's kind of long. I think I'm going to go to the shop really quick.
Oh man. Yeah. Like there's a lot of bars in this town, but if I caught myself at one of them, I think it would be a bad sign. Like things would not be panning out very well.
Yeah. I hear you. I mean, I don't, it's one industry where there's a lot of industries where you can have a beer at the end of the day while you're maybe finishing cleaning up your last couple things, but I really keep those things extremely separate. Cause like I still have all my fingers and by golly, I'd like to keep them as long as I can.
Oh yeah. I get hurt in the most like, stupid ways and it's, you know, they're never like super serious, but it's always like this close to being something serious, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I cut myself with the edge of the chisel, like the side of it.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, Lee Nielsen advertises that they're real sharp. Yeah,
I'm like, this is, it's like sharper than like butter knives at home, you know?
Definitely. No, I mean, every time I cut myself, it's something dumb. Mm-hmm. It's never like table salt. Like I've never set off a break on the saw stop.
I never have with like my skin, you know, like I cut aluminum and set it off. And
yeah.
The other time it was just like some kind of weird interference, they said.
Weird. I cut aluminum for the first time I was making those bookends, those sliding bookends for these floating shelves I did. And I cut aluminum on that thing for the first time. I was cutting it because I was too scared at first. So
it's a little scary.
It's a little scary. I was cutting it because it's 1/4-inch aluminum, which is probably about as thick as you want to go.
I've done 1-inch solid square on that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And how did that go? Low and slow.
The scary part is when the piece that you're cutting is like comes off,
yeah, you know,
because it's sitting there next to the blade. And I was making like slices and then I would turn them into, were they hexagons? I was making those watch boxes.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing those.
And then I had to put like a groove down the middle.
I remember when I saw you doing that, I remember thinking like, geez, that's.
Yeah. I was making octagons out of solid, like 1-inch bar.
See, sometimes you just shop stuff out.
Yeah.
But I was,
and then I found that you could buy like hexagon or whatever aluminum.
Oh
yeah.
That hurts.
Well, yeah, for like the last one I did it, but we're not making those anymore.
Yeah.
Those were the Design Week clients.
There you go.
But I lost their number.
I mean, doing small stuff. You guys make those boxes, those salt boxes. That looks hard, like really hard.
Yeah. We're in the middle of one of those right now.
Yeah. I've seen all the trials and tribulations of the laser.
Yeah, it's rough. So I should be getting parts. I'm not going to be here, but they should be showing up next week for that laser. And then the new laser is supposed to show up next week. But of course, I'm not going to be here. So it's going to come the following week.
So it's just kicking it down the road.
Yeah. So I keep messaging poor Adam with updates. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, we're going to have to disappoint some people, I think. It's, they're due mid-May. I mean, so it's like nearly impossible.
I mean, that is the worst thing, too, when you like give a client like a hard deadline. You know, you're like, I'm going to like real confidently, turns out you really confidently lie to somebody about like when something's going to be there.
And that was like the guarantee, like, you know, that was like a no questions date. It's oh yeah, mid-May, definitely.
Tons of
time. The problem is with this, it's not like I'm disappointing one client. We're literally going to disappoint 500 people because they're already sold. They're already sold.
Because you pre-sell all.
They sold in January. Yeah.
Shit. That sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the most part, people are pretty understanding. And it's like, listen, if you want to cancel the order, there's 20 people behind you waiting to buy that box that you're supposed to get.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So you could like, you could make nothing but those boxes. And
yeah, like we could probably make them in batches of like 1,500 and they would probably sell out every time.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool.
It's just a lot of work.
I mean, yeah, when I was making these small mitered boxes, like, and I was telling you about this, like I have some relationships with these like Amish woodworkers out in Pennsylvania. I mean, man, they'll do them for what, less than what I'll get the material for.
Yeah.
And like, you really appreciate in this business, like men, like people who do like large scale manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Like I always think about like iPhones, like people are like, they're so fucking expensive. I'm like,
try making that yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, that is the most, that is a pocket supercomputer that like they, you know, give to you for $1,000. Like that's insane how that.
Go back to the 50s and find something that had the computing power of this. I'm not even sure anything existed. Well, probably, but it was the size
of this room.
Yeah. And it probably cost like a million, you know, whatever, $5 million or something.
Yeah. Which was a lot more back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, no, it's like manufacturing small stuff is so hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why like shopping out drawer boxes, things like that just makes so much sense, especially for me.
And especially when the client is, you know, they're not concerned with that part of the job.
No.
You know, like this is one of our drawer boxes that we just put together for a video.
I've been looking at that. I've been looking at that the whole time and I'm like, those dovetails are tight.
And that's just on a router, you know, but to make that drawer box is going to cost the client, say, $500. We could buy that drawer box for like, it's not going to look like
that. Yeah, you can't buy that drawer box.
No. But like same size for like $50, maybe not even.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was making this table for another design company and And it in one of the legs, it had this little pull-out drawer that was, like, so small, like, the only thing you could put in it is, like, TV remotes and, you know, whatever. And the whole table's out of mahogany. And I was like, do you care what the drawer box is made out of? And they were like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We want that to be mahogany also. And I was like,
you're like, butt joints it is.
Yeah, exactly. No, literally, I was like, well, we're getting rabbits. We're getting rabbits because you're not going to be able to tell.
A lot of people just build with rabbits, you know? And you get the nice, clean side. It's
they
like,
look nice. Yeah. They look nice. It was a, it's a beautiful drawer box. The funny thing is they, the this design company came back to me, and I think next week I'm literally going to be remaking these legs because the outside of the legs does, they're sort of just boxes, like a drawer box almost, but tall, but they're, but the exterior part of the leg has a, has dovetails on it.
Oh, cool.
But the drawer box itself is just butt joint.
Like, well, I spent all the dovetail time there.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can't do both.
I'm like, you don't, and I asked them, I was like, you guys care if that's dovetail? And they were like, no, don't do that. But still, I'm going to have to make another one because they wanted them 3 inches bigger.
Oh, wow.
They decided, no, we will spend our limited time and resources making this one. And this is for a showroom. This isn't even for a client. This is literally just for them. They were like, we want it 3 inches bigger in every direction. Oh,
do you get to keep the old ones?
You know, I haven't broached that yet, but that they might just stay. They might just not make it back to their showroom. They got a lot of stuff going on, you know?
Yeah, you're actually doing them a favor by keeping them.
Exactly. They could go into that's. But see, this is what everything in my apartment is cobbled together pieces of things that I like didn't make for somebody else.
Yeah, I definitely want to make a dining table when I do the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I would love to make some like conoid chairs.
Oh my god!
But like, yeah, I got time for that.
I mean, how long? Like, how long would that take to do a set of six?
I don't know. It's got to take a while. Like probably, I mean,
just the jigs.
Probably 2 weeks.
Yeah. What kind of dining table do you want to make?
Well, I started drawing something like with this like monolithic base that's sort of just like almost like a big glue up.
Cool.
And then it has, you know, legs that are notched in.
Mm-hmm. I've done one of these.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, here, I'll show you. They're.
And then I was playing around with like, you know, different size holes and stuff in the base or something like that. Yeah, I don't. I didn't sink too much time into it, but oh yeah, that's cool. So the one that I was thinking, like, so your long piece would be full height, and then it would have like almost like conoid style feet on it. You know,
I mean that would be gorgeous.
Yeah,
yeah, but also like that's not a. I mean, it's a lot of like shop resources, but it's not a ton of time.
No, no. And that was my aim. It was like design something cool that's like I could bang out pretty quick.
Well, I can give you these guys' number. They could do a glue up for you.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's not a bad idea. I'm just gonna make it out of plywood.
Well, yeah, 1 inch ply it is. Put it on the edge bander.
Take this table home.
Yeah, exactly.
This is wood that was just like laying on the floor when we moved in.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's got character.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice. I gotta say.
This is that Kimivere finish on top.
This is great.
Yeah, it was kind of a nightmare, though.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
It was. It's a lot thicker than the vesting.
Oh, really?
So it's like really hard to remove. You know, when you have to wipe it off.
Oh.
Yeah, it sucked.
Oof. Yeah, for reference, I'm down here because I'm getting Jeff and Rob's hand-me-down vesting lamp.
Yeah, it's actually right over there.
Hell yeah! Well, next time you guys have like another hand-me-down tool, just. I should be your first call.
Oh yeah, I'll let you know.
Yeah, because
what else we got here?
Yeah, what do you got? What do you not want?
Who the hell's calling me from? It's MN Minnesota.
Yeah.
I don't know who's calling me from Minnesota.
Somebody who wants a white kitchen.
Yeah. We have a hinge boring machine going to a guy in Long Island City.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. What is this thing? Charles Cali, right?
I don't think I know.
You follow him?
Mm-mm. Is he cool?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I don't think I do enough doors.
Oh, this is Ridgewood.
Oh, word.
A lot of white oak.
That's right by me.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like really close to my shop.
Yeah, I told him that same thing. He's got to come so I can hold him hostage for the podcast.
This is a good, it's a good system you've got.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's tough. Like I've asked a couple people, but it's like, I know how it is. Like, you know, it's like your whole day is screwed basically. Like if I was just like, hey dude, you want to come do the podcast? It's like, well, write this whole day off.
Right.
You know, it's like,
exactly.
And I know that's a lot to ask of people.
Right.
Cause we've done it. Like we went out to RT all the way. In Hughesville, Pennsylvania. Like that was a long day.
Yeah. Just to shoot for, or to record for what, like 2 hours or something.
Yeah. So we went to like Lewis Lumber first, and then we went to RT, you know, we had lunch, we toured the thing, we did the podcast, but you know, that day cost me a lot of money.
Does.
And that's not to say I regret doing it at all. I don't. I would do it again. But, you know, it's just I feel bad asking people.
Yeah. I mean, but like, look, it's like today was great because it's this funny thing where like you feel like anytime you have one thing that's not work related in a day, you're like, just God, this whole day is terrible. This is ruined. Yeah. Like even if
the dentist at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. It's like I can't get anything done. And it does feel like that. Like I'm always joking with friends that like, yeah, you know, like you wake up at 6:30 in the morning, you like go to the gym for an hour, you're back from the gym, showered, ready to go to work at 8:00, and then somehow you don't get in until 10:30.
Yeah.
And it's just like, damn. And that like, I don't know. Yeah. Days have gotten shorter. Like as I get older, like, and get deeper into the business, it feels like, yeah, days are super short.
Yeah. Like, so a lot of times I come in at 6:00, like that's the time I wake up early. So like 6:00 is not crazy. But so like I was here at 6:00 and I knew Keith and Jackie were going to be here at 8:00. It was like I blinked my eyes and they were here.
Yeah.
I'm like, where did 2 hours go?
Right.
I'm like, I didn't do anything. I didn't accomplish anything. Yeah.
Right.
Like I took some stuff out of the van. I
scraped some glue up.
Did
glue
a little
up or something,
sample. And then, yeah. Like I'm like, man.
No, turning all the lights on takes... You feel like you're like, God, it's lunch already.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. But, you know, like when I do have a day like this, if this does happen again, I'm always happy to come down.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Like it's nice to get out of the shop. Like it's nice to be in somebody else's space. It feels like, you know, I mean, you guys, it's so good that like you guys work together.
Yeah.
Like that's so, you know, I think special. But when you work alone, it's like sometimes I get like just like weirdly in my head about like, like the imposter syndrome sets in, right? Like, and you need to have other people to like check that from time to time.
Yeah. You're like, am I doing this? Like, does this look okay?
Yeah. Is this good? Is this bad? Like,
even just to bounce an idea off of, or just unload some of the stuff. Like, you know, there's all these things that we have to do that really suck, you know, like sanding. And it's like, just knowing that someone else is there to help
do that,
carry that burden is huge.
No, totally. I mean, that's, like I always joke, like if something has to get done, I got to do it or it's not getting done.
Yeah.
And like, that's just the end of it. And you know, I have friends and I have people who help me out, but like at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, I'm sanding. It's me.
You're the master of the domain.
Exactly. Which I mean, like, you know, again, like I said earlier, it's like, I definitely don't want to work for anybody else. And I like making my own schedule and like, and cause like when I, you know, I couldn't just like, you know, skip town and come down here and hang out and like see your shop if I wasn't doing it myself.
Yeah. And like, you know, these are all, we were talking about it, watching Ishitani. I'm like, this is like personal development. You know what I mean?
Totally.
This stuff too. Like if you're shackled by working for someone, you don't have the, opportunities to do those kind of things where it's like, sometimes it's just like one little thing that just like sets you off into, you know,
into another direction.
Else. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I am pretty techie, but like not a super tech focused kind of person. Like, I mean, you guys are good, you know?
Yeah.
In any case, I have friends who, you know, use like, who are designers who, use like those, the AI models generate images and stuff like that. Like when they'll be putting proposals together, they'll just like feed in a bunch of images and then get out, you know, something kind of in the vein of like what they're proposing to a client or something like that for like a visual identity or a design or something. It's actually really cool. And my friend took a bunch of photos of my old work and fed it into one of these models, and it made all these crazy images of like pieces of furniture that make no sense, that don't do anything, that are like completely nothing.
Oh yeah.
But had all these like sick elements in them that took from my work, and like it gave me like 100 ideas. Mm-hmm. I was like, went over these photos and was like, oh my God, this is so smart. Like this, like, you know, the sum total of like, you know, human knowledge has like improved my furniture. Like, and I took little details from like certain stuff. Yeah. They put like light bulbs everywhere for some reason. God. But like, yeah, it was kind of cool. And so like, I don't know, that kind of finding all those like different ways to get inspiration, you know, to you is like, I think is like, can be really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard when you're just in the shop all day, like making stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, creative drain is definitely real, you know.
Totally.
I haven't been, you know, creatively inspired in a while, but when you're just like grinding, you know, it's just like, I got all this work and none of it is really like creative.
Nope.
A lot of it is just designers sending stuff and we're building it, you know, we're making small interpretations here and there, but, you know, we haven't done anything that was like really cool in a while.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I hope you guys get back to it, because I feel like the stuff that when you guys are really on it, your game is so strong. Like you guys make the coolest stuff. And also it's like, I feel like the way that your work is interesting is that it exists so squarely in like this American tradition of like furniture making that like in reality is actually like 15 different traditions that come from all these different places that have all these different inspirations. But like the way that when you draw them all together and kind of like seat it really squarely in like an American craft tradition, like that's when you guys make sick work.
Yeah, hopefully. I feel like maybe like the market right now, just like the furniture market and cabinet market is kind of like in a spot where it's just not really like a thing right now.
No.
Especially like out here. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, but also like, you know, when there's an ebb, that means there's going to be a flow.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so like, I think that, you know, the good thing about it is like there will always be like new styles that come into being. And also because of like the ubiquity of like people seeing stuff on Pinterest and Instagram, like, when a new trend comes around, it's going to come around fast and hard.
Yeah.
And so like you guys, you know, I feel like I try to not be set up to do any one thing, because I just don't have the space to be like, I don't have the space to be set up to do any one thing super well. So I just do everything kind of okay.
Yeah. You have to be,
but I'm flexible.
Yeah. Flexible. Yeah.
And that's like, that's, I think where, you know, I'm like somebody, anything but a kitchen. Anything but a kitchen. Like if somebody asked me to do it, I'm like, sure, I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's what we spent like the first four years of the business, just like saying yes to everything and then just figuring it out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, but it makes you really good at like figuring it out.
Yeah. And then you start to realize like what you can do, what you can't do. It's like what jobs you should take, which, you know,
you really shouldn't take.
But not every job is like, you're not getting paid in money on every job. You know, knowledge is worth a lot.
So totally.
It's like, if you have to take the job, and even if you just end up breaking even,
you know,
it might have been worth it.
Yeah. No. And I mean, I've definitely taken jobs where even just the experience of like, oh boy, I should not have done that way, or I should not have taken that job. Like just learning that way is like, you know, you really like, you do not make that mistake twice. Mm-hmm. And that's like a, that I think is at the end of the day, a pretty good, like, can, you know, doesn't, it's pretty tough.
Yeah. It hurts pill to swallow.
Yeah. in the moment, but like eventually, yeah, you like, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah. That was like when we had to put the lien on that guy, like,
you know,
it sucked, but now I'm totally prepared. If that happens again, it's like, I know I got to do this.
Exactly. That's it,
you know?
I mean, you guys were the ones who, I remember a few years ago, you talking about like taking, like what you would take up front, how you do your contracts. And I remember at that point, I was literally just like, yeah, sure, I'll do that for this much.
10%.
And like, pay me whenever. And like now I'm so like, you know, religious about it. And when people balk at like, you know, taking 65-75% up front, I'm like, sorry, man.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It is what it is. It's like, I don't want to get screwed.
I still know guys who do like 50-50, 40-60. I'm like, how do you
do
that?
No, I mean, like, that's so much money to just front too. And like delivery, that's always separate, always like, you know, its own line item, and it's always as needed, right? So it's like, if congrats, if the install takes 2 days, I'm billing you for 2 days. If the install takes four, because like, you know, the GC's not ready, the space is a mess, I have to carry things upstairs, like whatever, you know.
That's something I have to start doing, is TNM on installs. I know a couple of people who do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I can't always get away with it, cause like I'm still small, and you know, sometimes I think, oh, I'm just bringing a desk in or something like that. It's like,
until there's a security cage.
Yeah, how bad could it be? And then like,
you had to buy $179 Sawzall.
And then you ruin the Sawzall. You know what? You can return anything to Home Depot. Say what you will about Home Depot. You can return anything to Home Depot.
I saw something. It was like a Costco meme. It was like, I saw someone returning a 20-year-old TV today, and it was like this like big screen. It was definitely not 20 years old. It was more like this big screen TV, you know, when they were like seven feet tall.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, you make it work. Make it work. And you learn. Like, that's the thing. I'll never be that dumb again to let a client like push me into making something bigger than I think it should be.
And, you know, you forget about the pain of it shortly thereafter. You know, it's like it really sucks at the time, but
no, that balance check hits and you're like, let's go out to dinner.
Yeah, that was fine.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do it again.
Well, you have any final words for the listeners?
Don't get into woodworking.
Yeah, that's pretty sound advice. Stay in school.
Keep it a hobby. Be an investment banker or whatever.
Plastic surgeon.
Totally.
Anesthesiologist.
Tattooer.
Yeah.
In Brooklyn. Oh my God. All my friends who are tattooers, no tax, work out of your house. Don't even need any kind of accreditation or anything like that. Just get the gun and get one of those chairs and go to town.
Yeah, I don't know what my guy charges now. I think it's a lot.
He makes more than you.
Oh, guaranteed. Yeah. I mean, that's not saying much.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Don't go to school. Just be a tattooer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be the title of this episode. Well, I appreciate you coming down.
Thanks, man. This was really fun.
Yeah. We got to do it again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you can't come to Brooklyn.
Well, I'll consider it. Well, thanks for everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. And I say this every week, and then I'm going to say in this recording again, we truly appreciate you listening. If you want to support the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Share the show with your friends, or consider subscribing to our Patreon. We'll see you next week. Yeah. Attack!